Yes, we always have places that resemble homes. Thought is not indefinite, and that makes our homes, and while we keep that thought, our homes are permanent. You ask where is that home located? I would say to you that all that is space is peopled with spirits. This lecture gave to us the spheres of progression. As you see, we were told not only their names, but something of the occupations that are pursued in the higher life. Not much can be told, I assume, but possibly all that a finite mind can grasp. I believe what I have written, not only because I know the one who talked, but because it appeals to reason, and is in harmony with natural law, as I understand it. True, it is hard to understand where these spheres are. But there are many things quite as difficult of comprehension. Astronomical instruments have shown that it is 93 millions of miles to the sun, but this really conveys nothing to the mind, because one cannot comprehend such a distance. We know that light travels at the rate of 186,000 miles a second, but what that rate of speed is we cannot understand, for there is nothing tangible with which to compare it. Our actual knowledge of electricity, of magnetism, or even of gravitation is limited, as are all of nature's laws. Then, is it strange that one finds difficulty in appreciating what space is and how it is peopled? This thought of ours is even now free and can pass through space, but it goes with closed eyes, hears no sounds, and feels no touch. At dissolution, each sense is quickened, and all life that fills space is visible to the spiritual senses and tangible to spiritual touch and brain. Space must then take form, substance, and reality, in a world of thought, boundless and endless. One in the afterlife gave me a description of the spirit home of a great, splendid mother, built by the labor of love and ceaseless charity, in the physical as well as in the spirit plane in which she now resides, one who worked long and earnestly to make women understand the truth so that they might live nearer to the best in nature. Here is the description as it was given me. Before me is the interior of a splendid home, the home made by a spirit, created and builded by the thoughts, acts, and works of one who, 32 years ago, lived on the material plane. The room opening before me seems like pure white marble with lofty ceilings. Around the four sides runs a broad balcony supported by columns gracefully turned. From a point beyond the center is a broad stairway curving outward. At its foot, on each side, a niche is filled with beautiful statuary. Going up the stairs now, I find each step a different color, yet all blending into one. On all sides of this upper gallery are windows through which come soft rays of light, opening off the sides of rooms, and, as I look, a door opens and a beautiful spirit comes out, taking on, as she enters, the old material condition that she may be recognized. She has reached maturity in years, and has a face of rare gentleness, the beauty of purity. She smiles as we describe her and her home to you. With her is a daughter just reaching womanhood, one that never lived the earth life but was prematurely born. These two, drawn by the invisible bond of affection, have builded this home and made it rich with love. Passing down the corridor now, the mother's arm about the daughter, they approach the other end of the building and descend a stairway similar to the first, and go out upon a broad terrace, along walks bordered with flowers, into the garden of happiness. Turning now and looking toward a valley, I see many trees heavy with foliage, and through them I behold the waters of the lake, rich as an emerald in color. About the vaulted room which I have described are many others of like material, filled with all that this mother loves. Books that she uses in her work are seen, pictures, created by acts of tenderness, adorn the walls. Musical instruments unlike those of earth await spirit touch. This is a home where girls, just budding into womanhood, are taught purity. This is a mother's home, and suggests to you the possibility of spiritual surroundings. It was not builded in a day, but is the result of labor in the earth and in spheres of progression, where the surroundings are in harmony with spiritual development, the home of a good woman, builded by helping others. I said to one of my friends in the afterlife, at another time, tell me of the homes of spirit people, and, in reply, he said, that is a most difficult thing to do, because earth people expect to find everything so different, while, in reality, The homes here are practically the same as in Earth life, except that there is in the advanced spheres no discord, no lack of harmony, nothing but light, beauty, music, laughter, blended with earnest, thoughtful study. I am describing the home of a spirit who has grown to know the life principle. There are many poor, struggling souls willfully, or ignorantly, looking down instead of upwards into the great possibility of the future, who are living in squalid huts which their deeds and thoughts in earth life have made for them. Very few have beautiful homes ready for them when they enter spirit life, for most people live in such ignorance of natural laws that they find insufficient shelter awaiting them, but the wise ones start to build by perfecting their way of thinking and by undoing wrongs on earth, and also, by helping others. No actual physical touch is given these homes, but, as the soul grows in beauty of thought and deed, the home grows to perfection. Are these homes as real to you as ours are to us? I asked. They are the abiding places of spirits who gather into them the objects of beauty they love. And their harmonious spirits come and go, as in earth life. They are as real to them as yours are to you. But we look at things differently, we think them, and the thought is expressed in waves that are visible and real as long as we hold the thought. Chapter 16 Their Daily Life. In my investigation I was always anxious to obtain a description of the occupation and daily life of those who live in the plane beyond, and asked many practical questions. What is this death change that seems so horrible to the average mind? I inquired. Death change, one answered, is simply the liberation of the spirit form from the physical body, composing the outer flesh garment, perfectly natural and painless. Every change in nature is beautiful, and dissolution is no exception to the rule. One simply ceases to be an inhabitant of your world, and in an instant one becomes an inhabitant of the world in which we now live. The second world or plane is just as natural to us as the first, but, of course, we live under different conditions. We pass our daily life as before. Our spirit is just as perfect a human form as it ever was. For your clear understanding of the modus operandi of the death change to this plane, we may say one parts with the physical body only. We lose none of our intelligence, neither is anything added to our understanding. What of your daily life? I asked. Our days are very busy, he said. There is no stagnation, but on the contrary intense activity among everyone, that is, when we have emerged from the earth conditions. There are countless millions of children unborn physically who are plunged into this world of ours, and there are millions of women here who have never known motherhood in earth life, who take and care for them, watch and aid their growth, mentally and physically, and in that manner satisfy the craving of motherhood. The insane pass from the earth life insane still, and countless numbers of our people are required to care for them and give them proper treatment so that their mentality may be restored to the normal. Murderers at war with humanity, hanged or electrocuted on the earth plane, are liberated in this community, and we are obliged to do what the world of men failed to do: control and educate them. Then, again, we have the ignorant and vicious. The atom of good that has found expression in them must be developed and directed. Few people come into this life with any conception of what or where it is, or of the controlling laws. The ignorance of the masses is pitiful. They enter our portals as helpless as the babe enters yours. So you see dissolution making no mental change, and life being material and continuous, there is just as great need for schools, colleges, and universities as exists with you. In fact, it may be said that everything you have in your earth life is but a poor imitation of what exists here and is largely the result of spirit influence and power. What of your homes? I asked. We have houses in which the family relation is continued, where every member's spirit is seeking enlightenment. The law of attraction is the dominant force here. We have a great number of thoughtful men seeking to discover and develop the hidden forces of nature. We have great lecture halls where those who are learned discourse upon the hidden forces. We have teachers who develop the spirituality, and discourse upon that great force called good and its function in the universe. It is a busy world where everyone is doing his or her part. We do not have any strife for money or need for money, so you see the occupation of the great majority of your people is gone. It is only by helping others in this life, And this is equally true of the earth life, that one betters his conditions and enriches himself. This is the law. The only happiness that the inhabitants of earth really get is through being charitable, doing good, and making the world happier. The only wealth that any man carries beyond the grave is what he gives away before he reaches the grave. Tell us something of your foods. Do you require nourishment? I asked. Yes, he answered, but not in the manner or in the way that you do. Our digestive organs continue their functions, and we require food, but we take the essence while you take the substance. You take food day by day in earth life. The substance is absorbed in the physical garment, but it is the essence of the food that nourishes the spirit body from day to day. The substance is no longer necessary, but the essence is necessary just as it was before. So you see there is very little change in physical necessities. Tell me of your political economy, I asked. There is, Dr. Hossok answered, no aristocracy in this land of ours, but mind and merit. The law of nature, which is the supreme force, called universal law, has to be obeyed, in order that each sphere may be reached. Every individual remains upon the plane for which he is fitted, until he subjects his will to the universal law. As he progresses, he learns new laws, but they are fundamentally the same, only they grow more intense and vital, until he becomes a part of that law himself. The political economy of the spheres has reference only to wealth, which being unbounded and free as air and light, can, of course, be appropriated by each and every member of society, according to his or her capacity of reception, the supply being equal to the demand. Hence it will be seen that we have no occasion for gold and silver which perish with the using, but the currency of moral and intellectual worth, coined in the mint of divine love, and assayed by the standards of purity and truth, is necessary for each one. Tell me something of your social life, I said. With regard to the social constitution of the spheres, he answered, each is divided into six circles or societies in which congenial people live together agreeably according to the law of attraction. Although the individuals composing such society unite as near as may be in thought, agreeing in the most important moral and intellectual features, yet upon careful analysis we find that the varieties of character in each society are almost without number. They are perfectly analogous to the numerous members of the different societies on the earth plane. Each group has teachers more advanced than the members of the group, and teachers often come from higher spheres. They impart to us the knowledge that they have acquired in their progression in the different departments of science, which we, in turn, transmit to those below us, just in the same manner as we are transmitting knowledge to you now. Thus, by receiving and teaching, our intellectual faculties are expanded to higher conceptions and more exalted views of nature's laws. Our scientific researches are extended to all that pertains to nature, to the wonders of the heavens and of earth, and to whatever the mentality is capable of conceiving and comprehending. In this manner we get our progression and enjoyment. The sciences of astronomy and mathematics engage our attention. These subjects are inexhaustible. Chemistry is the most interesting of any of our studies, as it would be to you if you only appreciated the fact that all change in nature is the result of chemical action. You do not mean to say that all of your inhabitants are sufficiently advanced to do that work? No, he answered. There are millions of inhabitants of this life who are not sufficiently advanced to take any interest in such studies. As we have passed beyond the rudimentary sphere, our intellectual energy is increased, our perception improved, and we can by intuition, as it were, more correctly and rapidly conceive and understand those principles and truths which are the basis of all scientific work. In addition to our research, we have our diversion from which we obtain great pleasure. We come together in social intercourse, just as you do. Families meet and have reunions, just as you do. Not one particle of love is lost, but rather it is intensified. Everything is intensified to a degree that you cannot imagine. Your pleasure and amusements can in no way compare to those which we are privileged to enjoy. What of the religious movement among your people? I asked. In the lowest of the spheres, that is, in the earthbound spheres, sectarian strife and religious movement are just as strenuous among the people as they were before these persons left the physical body. That state of transition is but little removed from the physical, for, while the majority of them know they have left the body, others have such an imperfect appreciation of the change, or have led such immoral lives that they are not conscious of the fact. Here the dogmas of orthodoxy are dominant, and the old religious teachings are promulgated, and the priesthood still holds power. One would think that an individual having passed through the portal called death and finding nothing as he had been taught, or as he had believed, would give up the old notions and try to comprehend the economy of the natural law under which he continued to live. But, strange as it may seem, many even then cling to the old beliefs as if in fear, as if to doubt was sacrilege, and in many ways excuse their failure to find what they expected. They go into your churches and mingle with other people, a great invisible host, hear the same old teachings, say the same creeds and continue in the same mental attitude until some condition is brought about them that guides them into the avenue of knowledge, and as time goes on, one by one they break the shackles about their mentalities, and by progression, through individual effort, become inhabitants of the first spirit sphere. Everyday matters are no different in our sphere than in your sphere. You do not progress and obtain knowledge and advancement until you break away from the old beliefs and creeds. Neither do those out of the body in that earthbound condition. You see, there is but one law for you and one law for us. All of nature's laws are universal. Our laws are meted out on a scale of exact justice. All nature's laws are exact laws, and from their award there is no appeal. Punishments are but the natural consequences of violated laws, and are invariably commensurate with the offense, and have reference to the reformation of the offender as well as to the prevention of future crimes. What are the best results that will come to mankind through communication with your people? I asked an inhabitant of the afterlife. He answered, I will briefly call your attention to a few of the most prominent of the beneficial results which will flow from spiritual intercommunion. It will settle the important question, if a man die, shall he live again? It will reduce the doctrine of the immortality of the human spirit to certainty, so that the world's knowledge of the fact will not be the result of a blind faith, but a positive philosophy. It will show the relation existing between mind and matter. It will make men thinking and rational beings. It will establish a holy and most delightful intercourse between the inhabitants of the terrestrial world and the departed spirit friends. It will expand and liberalize the mind far beyond your present conceptions. It will fraternize and unite all the members of the human family in an everlasting bond of spiritual union and harmonious brotherhood. It will establish the principle of love to God and your fellows. It will do away with sectarian bigotry. It will show that many of the so-called religious teachings are but impositions on the credulity of mankind. I am always anxious for a further description of yourselves, your pleasures, your intercourse with each other, and it is difficult for us who have only had experience with matter in its physical state in any way to comprehend life in another state, I said. We derive much pleasure, was the reply, from the exercise of our talents in vocal and instrumental music, which far excels the noblest efforts of musical genius on earth. When we convene to worship God in our temples, whose halls and columns beam with inherent light, our voices are blended together in songs of praise and adoration to the Almighty Author of our existence. We are moral, intellectual, and sensitive creatures. Instead of being, as many of you imagine, mere shadowy and unsubstantial entities, we are possessed of definite, tangible, and exquisitely symmetrical forms, with well-rounded and graceful limbs, and yet so light and elastic that we can glide through the atmosphere with almost electrical speed. The forked lightnings may flash, and the thunders roll in awful reverberation along the vault of heaven, and the rain descend in gushing torrents, but we can stand unharmed by your side. We are, moreover, endowed with all the beauty, loveliness, and vivacity of youth, and are clothed in flowing vestments of effulgent nature suited to the peculiar degree of refinement of our bodies. Our raiment being composed of phosphorescent principles, we have the power of attracting and absorbing or reflecting the rays evolved, according as our condition is more or less developed. This accounts for our being seen by clairvoyants in different degrees of brightness, from a dusky hue to an intensity brilliant light. Chapter 17 Facts. Well to know. Are you ever told by those in the afterlife anything you did not previously know? I am often asked. Yes, but future events have never been foretold, for the simple reason that the future is no more known to them than to us. I have been told many things I did not know, and some beyond my comprehension now. One speaking of the human heart said, "It is the chief organ of the body. It pumps blood every second to the extremities, to the feet as well as to the brain. Every thought breaks down tissues, every movement produces waste. Let it stop for one moment, and dissolution takes place. It is sending life to every part of the body." "We all know," I replied, "that it takes energy to keep anything in motion, and whenever there is motion there is waste. What then supplies energy that keeps the heart in motion?" Michael Faraday coming in said, "You have been told that by the process of decomposition of water you obtain electricity. This proposition you can demonstrate to be a fact. Now oxygen is one form of electricity, hydrogen is another form of electricity called negative electricity, magnetism is in fact negative electricity. The tremendous power in nature's compounds called chemical affinity is due to the union or attempt at union of positive and negative electricity concentrated in the atoms composing the different so-called elements of the compound. Chemical affinity is the affinity of electricity and magnetism for each other. Electricity and magnetism are both matter in its simplest yet highest or greatest degree of atomic activity. But beyond the electromagnetic is yet a greater degree of eliminated refined atomic activity, which is the realm of spirit. Electromagnetism in true equilibrium is etheric, the dwelling place of spirit and the connecting link between spirit and the material compounds in various states of atomic activity. Electricity and magnetism are the male and the female elements in the universe. From the oxygen of the air by pulmonic process the blood gets electricity. From the hydrogen of the water by the digestive process the blood gets magnetism. The oxygen of the water is absorbed by the iron of the blood, by the nitrogen of the air partly mixed with the blood at the lungs, and partly by the nitrogen of the food taken into the stomach, the flesh compound is formed. Hydrogen and carbon form fatty compounds. One set of blood discs are electric, the other, magnetic. The electric discs have an affinity for the magnetic discs when out of equilibrium. But at the lungs they are in equilibrium and hence repel each other to the left auricle, then into the left ventricle, the valves preventing backflow. This repulsion of the discs to each other must carry the whole crimson mass forward while the equilibrium is maintained to the capillaries. The electromagnetic equilibrium of the two sets of discs is lost in the capillaries and becomes less and less to the right auricle. Of these discs the set nearer the heart because of the inequilibrium, attracts the ones next behind, all the way from the capillaries to the right auricle where, by electric action from the brain in moving the heart to contraction, the equilibrium is again partially established. Now the two sets of discs repel each other to the lungs and through the pulmonary capillaries where the equilibrium is more perfected so that the repulsion of the discs carries the blood into the left auricle. Thence by muscular action into the left ventricle and by further muscular action into the aorta. The heart being in equilibrium to arterial blood and positive to venous, attracts. The scientists have not yet discovered that electricity and magnetism are the male and female elements in the universe. Knowing as I do that everything in the universe is composed of matter varying in vibration only, and that the spirit body is composed of ether, electric, and magnetic in its composition, one evening I inquired of one in the plane beyond the physical, one versed in the action of electricity, how it was that electricity could by its action destroy life, and I recall very distinctly his answer. "You are aware," he said, "of the voltage used in the various prisons when they put a criminal to death. You are also aware that frequently a current with many times the voltage used in electrocution passes through a body without serious injury. It may startle you to know that any person who has been electrocuted, or who has suffered a lightning shock, or who by accident has received a charge of electricity that has apparently produced death, could be restored to life by proper treatment. The charge of electricity, as applied in our prisons, paralyzes the heart action, all the bodily functions, and the person is apparently dead. But you have probably observed that whenever and wherever a person is put to death under sentence of the law, a post-mortem follows. Death was and is produced by the post-mortem and not by the electric shock. In the beginning, surgeons were anxious to note the effect of the force, and undoubtedly made very careful post-mortems. You would be astounded to know, as we know, that post-mortems have lost interest and that frequently they now consist of jabbing a knife into the apparently dead body and passing it on for burial. When a person receives an excessive charge of electricity, either by accident or design, and the bodily functions are thereby temporarily paralyzed, if the body were immediately stripped, laid upon the fresh earth and sprayed with water, the electricity would be drawn therefrom, and would pass into the earth. If then artificial movement of the arms and stimulants were resorted to, the heart action would be resumed, and one apparently dead would get up and walk away. Persons die from electric shock because they are not properly treated. When the bodily functions are paralyzed and the electricity is not immediately drawn from the body and the action of the heart is not started by artificial means, death will, of course, ensue in a short time. If the treatment described is administered in time, there is no occasion for dissolution from electric shock. Electricity is life, and life will not destroy life. In this day, where electricity is in such common use, countless lives could be saved if the facts that I am now giving you were known and the treatment applied. I received this information some years ago and thereafter arranged with one of the wardens of a prison in New Jersey to undertake to resuscitate a convict who was to be electrocuted, but the plan came to the attention of the authorities and was forbidden upon the ground that it was interfering with the due execution of the law. Society must, of course, have protection from the acts of the vicious, and laws are properly made to imprison those who cannot be controlled. But the representatives of the people assembled in the various legislatures have not the right to prescribe the penalty of death. There is a limit to their sovereignty. What right have we as a people to electrocute one who has committed murder? The life of every individual comes from God, and though it may have strayed far from the path of rectitude, yet the people have no more right to take that life than the murderer has to take the life of the murdered. What right have we as a people to electrocute a depraved criminal and by so doing liberate him in another sphere where he may continue wrongdoing? If the public understood what dissolution leads to, they would stand aghast and horrified at the mere suggestion of electrocution. Again I am asked, do you get teachings from the invisible world that are worthwhile? Let me answer by giving just a few among thousands received. Immortality is the first promise of which man is conscious. But, as he acquires that which he considers worldly knowledge, he tries to rid himself of this promise. It stays with him, however, and, no matter how often he may deny the fact, his everyday life keeps before him the claims of immortality. The fields, the fireside, the love, and companionship of his fellow beings all suggest immortality. The very thought that death ends all, causes him to shudder. Life would, indeed, be a hollow mockery if the earth life, with its joys and sorrows, its lights and shadows, were the end. Every heart throb is a protest against such thought. Nature not only promises eternal life, but fulfills the promise, else we would not be here tonight encouraging you to better efforts. Ages were required to develop men so they could discuss rather than fight over the matters concerning which they differ, and adjust them in the forum instead of on the battlefield. If you live a good life, the day of your death will be a great day, for it will be a day of liberty. But if you do not live as you should, the day of death will find you in bondage, bound by fetters of your own making. The manacles of earth are not nearly so binding as these will be. Follow where the light of spiritual guidance beckons, and do the things you find to do upon the way. Many tasks will be disagreeable and not to your liking, but they will be the very tasks you will need to perform. I feel that it is my duty to help those who try to help themselves. There are many on the spirit side of life who are so densely ignorant that they have no ambition to become better. They continue on in the same old rut in which they were when on earth. Such spirits are of no benefit to the people on earth, as they cannot bring useful knowledge to them. If you were able to see and know the conditions of the spirits in the lower spheres and could contrast their condition with that of spirits in the higher spheres, you would understand how important it is that people should be enlightened upon this subject while they are still upon earth. Friends, there is one God, the God of nature, or rather, the God nature,